This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hi, everyone. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And we have an exciting show for you again today. Ryan, you want to take it away?
Absolutely. Yes, we are speaking today with Kristen Arnold. We're going to be discussing her article in the April 2015 edition of the Toastmaster magazine, How to Moderate a Panel Discussion. A little bit about Kristen. Kristen Arnold is a meeting facilitator, moderator, trainer, and keynote speaker. Kristen parlayed her understanding of teams and teamwork with an MBA in marketing strategy into a specialized management consulting firm focused on building extraordinary teams in the workplace. Kristen is on the Executive Development Faculty in the Schulich School of Business at York University in Toronto. She's the author of Powerful Panels, a step-by-step guide to moderating lively and informative panel discussions at meetings, conferences, and conventions. Kristen divides her time between Scottsdale, Arizona and Prince Edward Island, Canada, and she is joining us today from Toronto. Kristen Arnold, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you so much, Ryan and Greg. It's great to be here.
And it's great to have you on the show. So, Kristen, I wanted to ask you, we, as you can imagine, speak with a lot of trainers and speakers on the Toastmasters podcast, and I know you're both, but you've also carved out this unique niche for yourself as a panel moderator. How did you find yourself involved in that line of work in the communications field?
Well, I do a lot of what I call facilitative presentations, and many of your members can certainly appreciate this in that I'm not a speak at people, I'm a speak with them and involve the audience in a high degree. In fact, I wrote a book about that called Boring to Bravo. There's a little plug there. It kind of entranced with this idea about the notion that audiences want more participation and they want more engagement. And I was sitting in a conference that had a lot of panels, and they were so horrible, Ryan, I wanted to put needles in my eyeballs. I could not stand it. I just kept writing things that I would do differently if I was moderating that panel. And so what do? When we want to find out anything of information, we Google it. And so I went to Google and I said, if I wanted to know how to moderate a panel, what would I do? And so I Googled it, and you know, nobody really owned that space. There's a bunch of blog postings, but if I really wanted to get the soup to nuts, one-stop shop, where would I go? There really wasn't anything. And so that's when I said, you know, I could do that. I could really help people, because a lot of us are asked to moderate or to be on a panel. And, you know, there are so many panels. I decided to do a little research project, and I asked over 500 executives and meeting planners, are panels on your programs? And 95% of them said panels are on their programs. So if we've got that many panels and about half of them are okay at best, which is what the data said, then there's room for improvement. And so I decided, let's make all panels just powerful, lively, and informative.
That leads perfectly into my next question. Now, I know sometimes when you buy a new car, all of a sudden you see the same car on the road all the time. I was wondering, I'm starting to see a lot more panels. Now, besides the audience involvement, why are we seeing more panels, and what makes a panel different from having a regular speech?
You know, that's kind of an interesting question, because I didn't really test the hypothesis that panels are becoming more prevalent. I think people want to come to conferences, meetings, conventions, and get the behind-the-scenes look. The Wizard of Oz pulled behind the curtain. They want the lowdown, the skinny that they can't get otherwise. I mean, I can see a speaker give their speech, a TED Talk, on YouTube. There has to be something that makes me want to come and see a live performance. Personally, I don't think there's any comparison between a YouTube and a live performance. I think live performance trumps anything. But, you know, if I'm going to spend the extra effort, I want to get something juicy. I want to get something spontaneous. I want to get something interactive. I want to get something that I can't get anyplace else. And I think that panels, when done correctly, can deliver on that promise.
That makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I guess another anecdotal observation that I've made, Kristen, is when I think of panel discussions that I saw years ago, I have the image in my head of the 10-foot table with the linen cloth with maybe five panelists exactly spaced 2 feet apart. But more and more, I'm seeing maybe almost like a lounge or nightclub type setup with large, comfy, oversized chairs or even love seats or maybe a coffee shop type setup. Could you talk maybe a little bit about the physical setup? And is that something you also think is changing or evolving, or what's your take on that?
So the panel, actually, here's the Cliff Clavin little factoid for the day, got started in like the 1930s. A guy named Harry Overstreet created kind of this panel format as a way of people having an impromptu conversation. And he said, I think this is fascinating. He said the one mortal sin of the panel discussion is for somebody to stand up and give a presentation. Now, I know there are a lot of panels that people start with presentations, and maybe they might have time for Q&A at the end. And I think what's happening right now is that, you know, we are more of an edutainment type of culture. We want the learning, but we also want to be entertained as we go along. And so the white draped table just makes us kind of groan as we walk in and go, oh my God, it's going to be another panel discussion. But if we walk in and we see something lively and interesting and entertaining, you know, the coffee table set up that's from Friends, or, you know, maybe you've got the Bill Maurer kind of layout from television, kind of a debate contrast. You know, so you can use some of the television shows as a springboard to having an interesting conversation. I mean, we've got a lot of talk shows, talk show hosts, formats. I was working with a sales organization, and, you know, the show Ellen DeGeneres, they had Sullen as their panel discussion, and they had the moderator who dressed up as Ellen DeGeneres, you know, wearing the Converse kick sneakers and, right, you know, wore a vesty kind of thing. And it was fun. It was energizing. It added to the liveliness of the discussion.
Very cool.
You mentioned it's a panel discussion and not necessarily a presentation or a speech. So what would be the difference between, let's say, a speaker and a moderator, or a moderator and an MC, or a Toastmaster for the evening?
Well, an MC is the glue that holds everything together from the beginning of the program to the end of the program. You could have the MC who moderates discussions, and I think that this is a growing trend, is that the MC would then say, oh, let's take all of our presenters and then let's do a panel discussion and talk about where we are in agreement, where are we in disagreement. And that's actually the more juicier piece, is where don't we agree? Where's the controversy? Where are the learnings that we can take from that? And that MC can then parlay their skills into moderating the panel. And then, of course, you have the speakers who would then be panelists. You could actually, as a speaker, offer your services as a moderator, and as a speaker, you could offer your services the MC. So the lines start getting blurred, but they are very different roles.
Interesting.
Yeah. In your article, Kristen, you talk about being a moderator as not being the person in the spotlight, but the person shining the spotlight, by way of analogy. I wonder about, I think there must be some kind of delicate balance there between being what you call, I think you've used the term, the guide on the side, and contributing your own value by synthesizing the comments that the panelists are making and drawing connections and that sort of thing. So how do you sort of walk that balance beam in an appropriate way as a moderator?
It's a lot easier if you are not a subject matter expert. So what happens with a lot of conference organizers is they'll pull somebody who is well-known, respected in the field, and say, you be a moderator of this conversation. But that's really tough to do, to be a moderator as well as a panelist. And if you really know a lot about that subject, I would actually push back and say, you know, I'd love to be a panelist. How about if you get somebody who is a skilled moderator who doesn't really have a position, a dog in that fight, who can really facilitate the conversation? Because what happens is sometimes if you have a moderator who has a lot of knowledge and expertise, they can tend to either dominate the discussion or sway the discussion. And we've seen that in presidential debates where a couple of moderators have stepped outside of that moderator role and have really swung the conversation in a different direction than it really needed to go. I think it's a delicate balance, and the key is that you have somebody who is a skilled facilitator.
I find that interesting because I have been at a couple of panels where the moderator didn't have the knowledge. And one of the questions I was going to ask, and I'll just pull it up right now, is that let's say that you are asked to present in a panel. Let's just say it's for doctors or some technical thing that is just way beyond you. You do your research, you talk to the panelists ahead of time, you get the general gist of things, but then you get into this heavy duty conversation. You need to interject, and it's like, well, they're going to look at you and say, well, what do you know? You don't know anything about this. Why are you interjecting? So how do you gain that credibility? I realize sometimes it's better, as you mentioned before, not to have that expertise, but how do you gain that credibility with them if you don't?
Yeah, so you need to do your research, obviously. I mean, I talk to all the panelists ahead of time, and depending on how knowledgeable I am about the subject or what kind of relationship, it's really about earning their trust that they know that you are a good moderator. Like, I set ground rules in place so that people know that they're supposed to be succinct and to the point. I ask them as pre-work, what are your top three messages that you want to get across? So I'm looking for panelists who are going to do their work. They're not just going to show up and throw up, because that's what they're going to do. You know, you are already doomed to failure. So I'm going to actually work with panelists to find out what are the things that you think the audience needs to know. On the other side, I go talk to potential audience members, and I talk about, and I ask them, what are the questions that you want to know? Pull back the curtain. What is it that would really make you go, ooh, you'd sit up and go, now that I'm glad I was here. And I am really attuned to asking great questions and great follow-up. I don't need to know tons. I need to know just enough about what are the pivot points in a conversation. And that's really one of my gifts, is that I'm a great synthesizer of information as well as a great questioner. I don't know how to explain it, but I do a lot of work with very left-brain, highly scientific engineering. And for some reason, I'm able to crystallize that thinking, use the wording, the phrasing. And sometimes, quite frankly, Ryan and Greg, I'm not sure I'm saying the right thing, but it comes out because I'm using their words and their terminology and summarizing and saying, is that what you're saying? And they're like, absolutely. So they're like, stunned that I can do that. But as a moderator, my chief reason for being is to be an advocate for the audience, that the audience needs to get what they want. So if I'm firmly planted in understanding what questions they want answered, and if I'm looking at the audience and the panelist is not delivering on that promise, you know, whatever we've promised in the marketing materials, then I'm able to shift and ask those questions easily.
Okay, so unlike an interview like we're doing where we have questions, you need to be able to change things very quickly on the fly, synthesize things very quickly, and go with the flow. Although I guess that's what we have to do here, Ryan, I guess.
yes, it is.
Yeah, so the only difference between moderating a panel is now you have multiple interviews. So
right.
An interview format is basically a one-on-one-ish, an interviewer and an interviewee. And then a panel is an interviewer and multiple interviewees. I guess here we're in a reverse kind of panel situation. You got two interviewers.
Right.
And I don't know what you'd call that. So the dynamics needs to get beyond a conversation between the interviewer and the interviewee. I mean, this is a great conversation we're having, but if this was in a panel discussion, I would be calling this a hot potato, because we're not involving any of the other panelists.
Right. Okay.
I mean, the goal is more of a discussion. I want the discussion among the panelists, and not so much with the interviewer. I want the panelists to be talking to each other, not necessarily talking to me. I prefer to be standing out in the audience and asking questions before I'll have the audience do questions, so that the panelists are talking to the audience rather than talking to me.
What you're saying basically makes sense. It's almost like having a talk show rather than, okay, let's panel number one, you have to talk. Panel number two, you have to talk. Panel number three, you have to talk. Taking a step back, What's a good way to open a panel? I know it's different than a speech.
So I'm taking a deep breath because most people are conditioned to say, welcome. You know, we're going to introduce Kristen Arnold, and Kristen Arnold, she's a great person. She teaches at Schulich University, blah, 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 blah. You know, she wrote a great book. Thank you very much. And Kristen, and then we give Kristen 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 10 minutes to blather on. And we never really get to the discussion, which is really why you have a panel. I believe that you should have the bio printed in the meeting information. Mm. And you basically say, Kristen, you know, she is an expert on panel moderation. And Kristen, give us one thing that, you know, you think this audience needs to know. I mean, like, you could get into it. You might want to say one fun thing about Kristen so that she's, you know, a normal human being to the rest of the audience. Like, you know, a little known fact about Kristen is she's one of the first women through the Coast Guard Academy. I think that's kind of interesting. So, Kristen, why don't you start off with what's the one takeaway that you think people should know about panels? You know, and you just immediately get into it. I think people want immediacy. They don't want the long introductions. They want to get right to the point. Are right to the discussion.
Okay, so somebody who's walking in the door will feel like they've just jumped in then.
And that's fine. Now, the other thing that I really like to do to help people connect is to put a PowerPoint up that has, as we're introducing Kristen and saying one or two sentences, and then Kristen says, you know, one or two sentences, there's like a maybe 15 seconds, 30 seconds, maybe a minute, is that we've got that maybe that bio information and her picture. If you're using a social media savvy crowd, maybe you put her Twitter handle there. And then introduce the next panelist. And then when you have everybody situated, is you put up a PowerPoint that has people's names, kind of the headline, so that people kind of remember, oh yeah, that's what her role is. That's why she's on this panel. And then their Twitter handle, and you have that in the same order that they're sitting in, which requires just a little bit of planning and preparation. But then that way people can kind of connect the faces with the names and which perspective are they bringing to the table.
It makes a lot of sense.
And then that way you don't have to do so much introduction. People don't need that as much. Mm-hmm.
Kristen, as you're trying to facilitate a discussion, I've seen this happen, I'm sure, with all the work you've done, you've seen it plenty of times. How do you handle the situation where you have the panelist who just doesn't get it? They're just grandstanding, going on and on and on about me, 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 and my perspective, and not engaging with the other panelists and not shutting up to give the other panelists an opportunity to contribute.
Yeah, so there's two things. One is you need to use some prevention strategies. And then if those don't work, then you use an intervention. And that is completely up to your own style. So my style is very quick to the point. I'll go, thanks for sharing. How about if we go to Greg? Greg, would you like to add something? If they've been talking you, I'll go, enough about you. Let's hear from Linda. I have no problem moving the ball along. And remember, you're the advocate, the champion for the audience, and they will thank you as well. I get away with that because I tell the panelists ahead of time, and I don't spend lots and lots of time with panelists, by the way. They're not interested. And the higher level panelists that you get, you know, the more executive ranks, they don't want to spend any time with you. But I do tell them what a few ground rules are. And one is, please don't dominate. You need to be aware of airtime. If you are taking up too much time or not getting to the point, I will intervene. That is my job. Don't take it personally. This is about a discussion. I encourage discussion. That means discussion amongst each other. So don't just talk to me, and discussion with the audience. This is about bringing them in and making them feel like they're part of the in crowd, inclusive.
What happens in a situation where the individual maybe misinterpreted or misunderstood, misheard the question, and you want to try to get that to them without making them feel bad or being rude?
So I'm trying to think of an example. They might answer it, and as they're answering it, I might pivot it and say, that's a really interesting point, and then restate the question. My first priority is for the audience to get what they came for. My second priority is to make the panelists look brilliant. If they're open to coaching and easiness then that's where we go. Every once in a while, you do get somebody that doesn't take the coaching real well, which case you just need to escalate the level of intervention and just shift the focus to another person.
That makes sense.
I've never had anybody be real bad, especially if you've bonded with that person, you've built some trust, you've had a little bit of time with them, and you said, here's my philosophy. I'm looking for a discussion. I'm looking for equal share of airtime. If I think that you're getting off topic or taking too much time, I am going to ask another panelist to chime in. Don't take it personally.
Mm. So there's no surprises in that case.
Yeah. We all have our horror stories, and I've only been really shocked by one or two people. But, they live in your mind, and you go, oh, my God, what did I? And usually those are political issues. Those are something that, even though you ask questions, you find out later, oh, my gosh, and, there's really no easy way to extricate yourself from that. And I do think that for your listeners, being a moderator is a challenging role. And when you're asked to do it, don't just say, oh, sure, I can do that. It really takes some skill and some thought and deliberate choices about how you're going to move forward between picking a really great topic and great panelists and picking an interesting format. I think that for your listeners, it's about knowing that you have choices and knowing that you don't have to have a white draped table, knowing that you can be preventive, knowing that you can make some interventions, knowing that you can do certain things. I wrote all of this in a great little book called Powerful Panels, which I encourage you to pick up. But there's also a free video course that you're welcome to take, because I'm passionate about making sure that if you say yes, that either you're going to moderate a panel or you are going to be a panelist, that you do it brilliantly.
That's certainly some great advice.
Makes sense. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on today and sharing your wisdom and experience with us, Kristen. And for those listeners who do want to find out more information, learn about your book and your course, where can they go to learn more about Kristen Arnold?
You go to www.powerfulpanels.com.
Powerfulpanels.com. Kristen Arnold, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.